The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, host of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find out more at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse, or, of course, contact us through people who help bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Nature's Answer. Nature's Answer has been providing quality supplements to educated consumers since 1972. And today we are very happy to bring on board our guest, Diane Gregg, who is both a registered nurse and a licensed midwife. Diane is involved in midwifery and has been for over 30 years. She has attended over 600 births as the primary midwife and assisted with thousands as an RN in the hospital. She is also a prolific author and has published many books, including Kids Involved with Birth, Tree of Life, Birth Stories, and today our focus is her newest published work, which is a beautiful CD called Basic Homeopathy for Birth. And we're going to talk about homeopathy for pregnancy and babies, and she shares her homeopathic knowledge for solving pregnancy and postpartum woes, and homeopathy can be inexpensive and effective. And you can always find out more about Diane at inspiringbirthstories.com. That's inspiringbirthstories.com. Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Ellen. It's great to talk with you.
So we're on New York time, which is 1 o'clock, so hopefully your listeners figured that out, because I know Arizona is only 2 hours away from New York rather than 3. But we have guests on really from all over the country. We had a natural veterinarian on from New Zealand recently. So, you know, of course, we're international. And the wonderful thing is that here on Progressive Radio Network, all of our shows are archived shortly after the live broadcast, and so people can listen in any time, day or night, 24/7, which I think is a real gift from Progressive Radio.
Yes.
Now, you have been a midwife a very, very long time. In fact, I believe you were there when I was giving birth to my first son, who's now 35 years old.
Yeah, hard to believe.
Is it amazing? It is amazing. And my daughter, who's 32, I will share with you, is actually pregnant now. So I'm sharing a lot of the information with her that we'll be talking about today as well. Now, what got you interested in, as a nurse, obviously, with conventional training, medical training, I'm sure you were not introduced to midwifery through your training back then. So what led you to it?
Well, this was in the early 70s. I was involved with a women's self-health group. At that time, women were getting interested in looking at their own cervixes and taking some control over their own health care. I was in a bookstore looking at, women's health books, and this book called Childbirth is Ecstasy just seemed to kind of leap off the shelf at me. So I bought it and read it and thought, this is really what I want to do. The hospital I was working in didn't allow, I was a nurse's aide at the time, to work on labor and delivery or postpartum in pregnancy. So I searched, I was in Denver, Colorado, and searched for a hospital that would let me work with pregnant women, and that turned out to be Denver General Hospital. And I worked there for about a year and a half.
So you actually went there to work on this project?
Well, no. This was much long time ago when I first started getting into midwifery.
And you were already in Colorado?
Yes.
Well, Denver is a wonderful hospital, actually, so that's a great place to get started and a great place to have on your resume as well.
Yes, this was Dr. Albert Haberkamp was the head of OB there and was doing the first fetal monitoring study in the world at that time, so it was a real progressive unit.
And at the time, back in the 70s, I know when I was having my children, you really had two choices, because one choice was conventional hospital birth, which involved mandatory things such as episiotomies, where they actually sliced the perineum, mandatory spinal injections for supposed pain, which of course can be very toxic both to the mother and the baby, and mandatory being strapped down on a gurney with your legs in a very inconvenient position for birth. So it was either that scenario or home birth.
Yes.
I remember. So you offered the option, and you still do, of home birth.
Yes, I have a little birth center, and I do birth there as well as home birth,
and
whichever
I think
people
that
prefer.
That has actually become better in more recent years, that there are hospital centers and there are midwives attending births in hospitals. And it seems to be somewhere in between the total freedom you have at a home birth and the total restriction you used to have with a conventional hospital birth.
Yes, I think birth centers, especially freestanding birth centers, meaning they're not directly connected to a hospital, offer the best alternative for a lot of women. They can feel, well, there's many reasons why women might choose a birth center over a home birth, but it offers many of those choices of comfort and different positions for birth and the things that people would want out of a home birth, and yet for some people that's a better option.
Well, I do want to focus on your brand new CD. Because I got it in the mail. It has a beautiful cover, and it has a tremendous amount of information. And also, you really are focusing on basic homeopathy. So these are things that mothers could actually use quite safely on their own.
Yes, and homeopathy is FDA approved. It's available over the counter, and it's very inexpensive, too, so I think that lends itself to people experimenting a little bit. And I find all you need is one experience with a really positive effect of homeopathy to be sold on it. It has no negative side effects, so you can use it safely in pregnancy. And it just has a wonderful, wonderful outcomes for people. And I mostly did this CD because homeopathy is an incredibly complex system. There are thousands and thousands of remedies, and I know many people involved in birth who feel like it's just too big, you know, to take on to try to learn a whole new system of healing. But
and when we say a new system of healing, it really is an old system of healing. So we're using the word fluidly at this point because we both know that we both know what it means. But let's backtrack a little bit, and could you please tell us more about homeopathy, what that word means, and what the system is about?
Okay. Homeopathy was developed by a medical doctor, Samuel Hahnemann, in the 1930s, and his philosophy was like cures like, and he experimented on himself, and his first what they call approving was he took quinine and experienced the symptoms of malaria. And then when given to a person who has malaria, quinine will cure it. So he experimented with many different substances. They can be vegetable, mineral, anything can be made into a homeopathic. And since his time, many other researchers have continued that work, and there are new remedies being made every day. But one of the basics of homeopathy in a traditional sense is that you take the entire person's symptom picture, and this can be things that you wouldn't think would normally be related, like whether they're thirsty or not, or whether they like fresh air when they're sleeping. And you pick the one remedy out of all these thousands that most matches that person's picture, and that's the one that's going to help them in healing. Because in pregnancy, women have very similar states, you can be a little bit more general with it. And there's, say, one remedy called Pulsatilla, which will turn a breech or bottom first baby around to head down. And it doesn't matter what the woman's personality is like, it will work that way for her.
Wow, that's really interesting. So let's spell that, because I'm sure a lot of people never even heard that word before, pulsatilla.
Yes, it's P-U-L-S-A-T-I-L-L-A.
And that's a remedy. People can jot this down or, of course, get the CD, Basic Homeopathy for Birth. You can find it at Diane's website at inspiringbirthstories.com. If you know anybody who's pregnant or is thinking about getting pregnant, it's great to have it beforehand. So with Pulsatilla, if you're getting close to the day of parturition or birth and the doctor says that the baby is sort of feet down instead of head down, breech, then if you take a Pulsatilla, it would tend to have the baby turn around?
Yes. It relaxes the uterus, which gives the baby a little more room to turn. We don't usually wait until until the last month, because, of course, the baby's getting bigger and there's less room to turn. But in the eighth month of pregnancy, if the baby hasn't turned around, then often we will give women this remedy, and we also have her assume a knee-chest position for 10 to 15 minutes a day, and usually within a week the baby will just flip right around. And in this time, if a baby is breech, it's almost automatically a cesarean birth. So this can be a really crucial factor for a lot of women.
Yeah, and it's so inexpensive and easy and safe to at least give it a try. It's amazing every single OBGYN doesn't use that.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, because aversion, which is the manual way that a doctor or a midwife can try to turn a baby, really has some significant risks, and they won't try it until the last month of pregnancy, because it can cause the placenta to come off or initiate labor, and you have to be prepared. You know, the baby has to be mature enough that birth isn't going to be a problem.
Well, that's what's so beautiful about natural healing, because we will usually intervene. I always like to call it a dipstick procedure, just like checking the oil in your car, instead of waiting until the engine has the red light on and then trying to put a piece of tape over the engine.
Right, exactly.
So much better. So much better.
Now, and just gentle, very gentle nudging back into balance and helping women along, as opposed to, like, Pitocin to start labor, just a drug that forces extra strong contractions. We can do similar things with homeopathy that are just very gentle and cause a normal labor pattern.
Now, another thing that I know you have in your clinic and that you know quite a bit about is water birds of various kinds. What are they about?
Well, water, of course, for most of us, we find like taking a tub bath as a relaxing thing. It has a lot of good mental and psychological connections for most of us. It also just alleviates pressure. If you have the tubs I have are actually made for water birth, so they're deep enough that the water is over the woman's belly, which really relieves the pressure of the contractions. And it's just amazing. I had a first-time mother get in at 3 centimeters, which is still early labor. You go to 10 centimeters. And within 2.5 hours, she was completely dilated and ready to push the baby out. That's pretty fast, even if it's not a first baby. So, of course, she was very happy.
Yeah, less going on. But, you know, so a woman is actually in water. And when you think about that, it seems really very natural, because the baby is in water while it's in utero.
Yes. Yes, and that's part of, some people are concerned about, oh, the baby's going to breathe underwater, but they don't, because they are coming from a water environment and they're not going to be stimulated to breathe until there's that pressure change of reaching the air.
Oh, in terms of the baby possibly drowning under the water.
Right, right. And they normally just float up, and we lift them right up and put them on Mom's chest, you know, so they are cuddled against her, can hear her heartbeat, and are their heads above the water.
And I'm sure that you have some much more relaxed babies, so they're not coming out, let's say, under, if anyone was ever in a regular operating room where so many births occur, you know, it's very sterile, and there's bright, bright lights, and everybody's in, a stress mode, and the mother's strapped down. What's wrong with being strapped down and using stirrups as a birth position?
Well, some doctors, like my mentor, Michelle Odant, calls that the stranded beetle position. And for one thing, you know, it's very hard to feel like you're doing something normal and natural when you're strapped down on your back. And movement and mobility just makes a huge difference in during the labor and during the birth. I've seen women just get up and walk to the bathroom, and it's enough to shift the baby and the baby's born. But if they were stuck in bed, for one thing, when you're on your back, you've got pressure against your sacrum, which is making the pelvic diameter smaller. Now, for a lot of women, it's not going to matter. They can still birth just fine. But for some women, either because of the position of the baby's head or the size or the force of the contractions, it just doesn't work well. And if they can get up and move to a different position, be on their hands and knees, be standing, lie on their side, whatever works for them works for the baby, and it helps them get out. So I find it interesting that women will just, at the very end, choose a different position. They'll just tell me, well, I've got to get up, or they'll go off the bed on all fours, or just change, and that's what brings the baby out.
Yes, so that's, you know, that's just such a great explanation about how just going along with the natural rhythms of life can make such a difference to create a birth experience that's very gentle, both for the mother and the baby, actually is safer. One thing that really is amazing is when we look at the birth outcome numbers of midwives in terms of safety and efficacy of birthing with midwives attending versus regular OBGYNs attending.
Yes, there have been quite a few studies done, you know, both with midwives in hospitals and with midwives practicing in birth centers or home births. And across the board, they have shown with similar populations that the midwife statistics are actually better than the hospital. They have lower rates of cesarean, they have lower rates of infection, lower rates of preterm and low birth weight babies. These are huge things which not only impact families, but impact our medical cost for the nation.
Yeah, that's so true.
I can't remember
the exact numbers, but yeah, I've seen that published many, many times. And a great magazine is Midwifery Today, if people find this topic interesting. And that's midwiferytoday.com. And I know, Diane, you actually have published in there many times, because what I did was I went on their website and I put in your name, and there's lots of articles you've published in that particular journal, as well as a brand new one on homeopathy.
Yes, yes, they split that article into two parts, but I've been writing for them for several years, and some birth stories and a lot homeopathy, because I just have such a passion for it and find that a lot of midwives are interested, but they just feel a little overwhelmed and bewildered by the choices, and so I'm trying to make that a little more simple for people.
Well, that's one of the things that's beautiful about that. Now, we're talking about water birth, and we're talking about some things in terms of home birth and other natural aspects of childbirth. So sometimes people have older children already, and why do you think that it is actually okay for other children to watch rather than it being sort of a mystery?
Well, you know, before the last century, it was normal that people birthed and died at home, and that was just seen as a normal part of the life cycle. And now both those ends of life have been shuttled off to the hospital or away from family members. But I think it creates a lot more sibling rivalry if you go away and you come home with this baby, you know. And children just do extremely well at birth. I've had amazing experiences. They're not scared. I had one little boy. We tried to put him to bed in his own bed. He didn't want to be away from mom. He's laying next to her and fell right to sleep, even though she's rolling around and kind of moaning with the contractions. That didn't bother him at all. He felt secure, and he was asleep. It was great, you know. And I had one little boy who was eight. He was sure he wasn't going to be involved in the birth. He thought that was really disgusting. And one advantage of being at home is the child can be wherever they want to be. They can be in the birth room or they can be in their own room, and they don't have to be involved. They have their own choices about it. It ended up that she birthed kneeling on the floor, leaning over the bed, and he was behind me in the doorway. And as we could see just about a silver dollar's worth of the baby's head, he starts saying, "Oh, it's so cute, it's so cute." You know, and it was just wonderful.
Yeah, there must be so many different personal stories that you have to tell. And you do, in fact, in one of your books, which is called Birth Stories, A Tree of Life, Birth Stories. So what we're going to do is just take a few-minute break right here, and so people can learn more about other great shows that are here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Diane Gregg, licensed midwife and RN. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
To the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, this is Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
I'm Steve Barnett. I'm your host for the Paradise Parking Lot, an environmental program on the Progressive Radio Network. We're on the air from 1 to 2 Eastern Time every Wednesday. And we talk about everything environmental. This is an hour show, so there are no sound bites. This is a deep discussion of controversial environmental issues. We provide information. We provide guides to action. We have wonderful guests. For example, we've had John Holdren, President Obama's science advisor. We've had Jaron Lanier, the creator of virtual reality. This program is designed for anyone who's interested in the environment and deepening their understanding of how our planet is changing and what we can do about it.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Back with the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z here at Progressive Radio Network. We'd like to thank our underwriters, including Nature's Answer. And you can find out more at naturesanswer.com. Nature's Answer has been bringing high-quality supplements to the educated healthcare consumer since 1972, way back when Diane and I were meeting each other, and today we have Diane Gregg on as our guest. She is a licensed midwife and a registered nurse, as well as being a friend and colleague, and she has been involved in midwifery for over 30 years. She has attended over 600 births as the primary midwife and assisted with thousands as an RN in the hospital. She is also an accomplished author and has published many books, including Kids Involved with Birth, Tree of Life, Birth Stories, and her new CD, Basic Homeopathy for Birth. Also, Diane maintains a birth center in Bisbee, Arizona, with two private birth suites, each containing a tub for water birth or hydrotherapy during labor. And she also still attends home births. Diane herself has 4 children and also is a grandmother with 2 grandsons, so she personally has had a lot of experience as well as professionally. So thank you so much for joining us today, Diane.
Thank you, Ellen.
Now, we talked a little bit about the difference between being cared for by a midwife versus being cared for by a doctor. Can you go into some of the other differences that people would experience, even in, let's say, the early part where they're just being watched?
Okay. Well, during pregnancy, a midwife usually does the same prenatal routine, timing-wise, that a doctor does. But we tend to spend a lot longer with people. Unfortunately, certified nurse midwives are sometimes bound by insurance companies, and they are forced into 15-minute visits. But I have worked with some nurse midwives and been really amazed at what they can impart in 15 minutes. But ideally, we have as much time as the family needs and do a lot of teaching just as part of our prenatal visits. We encourage children to come and be involved during that time to get to listen to the baby's heartbeat or help us feel the baby's position. All these things help to involve the child and make the child kind of protective of that baby as if it's their baby too, and I think helps to reduce sibling rivalry. And then again, during labor, the other kids are welcome to come and participate to whatever extent they want to. The mother's encouraged to eat and drink. A first labor is equivalent to a 50-mile hike in the amount of calories you burn. So to do that with no nourishment really makes no sense, and yet that's very common in the hospital. And to have an IV doesn't do anything for your dry mouth and throat, plus making you feel like you're a patient as opposed to a woman doing something completely normal and natural. We encourage change of position and movement. you know, listening to music, getting in the tub, being in the rocking chair, having your family with you, your husband can give you a massage. You know, all those kind of things can make a huge difference. Going outside, walking in the sun, you know, that can just help your labor progress. And a lot of labor is keeping you mentally and emotionally in a good space so that your body can do the work.
Well, I'm glad you brought up husband, because I know you mentioned a lot in terms of older siblings, but yeah, I mean, guys should be extremely involved, I would think, as well.
Yes, yes, and most of our, I mean, we really try to involve the family and have them be doing whatever, massage or supporting the woman in different positions, and just keep that bond secure, because whatever skills I bring to the situation, I'm only in their lives for a short time, and the more bonded that family can be, the better that's going to last for them in the long run.
Now, there are times, of course, when we do get into trouble in terms of complications in birth, even with the best intentions earlier on. So, you know, then what happens if someone's having a home birth or they're in a birthing center?
Well, many times, like we talked about earlier, we try to, we're for one thing just watching one mom and one baby, and so we're on the scene a little more, and we can pick up those subtle changes, and often with homeopathy or position change, clearing out people, whatever needs to happen, we can nudge the labor back on course with very little intervention. We're not waiting until a woman's hemorrhaging or the baby's in severe distress before we decide there's a problem and we try to do something about it. We're watching those signs at the very beginning. So it's, I mean, I only transport about 4%, 4 out of 100 women that come to me that were unable to deal with their situation.
What would happen?
Then we would go to the hospital. I would call ahead and tell them what we were coming in, you know, what we thought was going on, what we needed. And then we go in, I show them my chart and give a report. Unfortunately, the hospitals only allow 2 people to be with the mom in labor. I'm not sure if there's any place where that's different at this time. And so sometimes I work a lot with a Spanish-speaking clientele, and yet I'm not fluent in Spanish. I speak some Spanish. But so there have been times when I've transported and ended up leaving after I gave my report so that the woman's aunt could be there or someone else that was more important to her than I was, because I wasn't bilingual.
So you could basically take them to the hospital, and so most midwives do have a relationship with a local hospital, and then it's up to them to make the decision of when that kind of intervention might, in fact, be required.
Yes, that in addition to each state has laws about, you know, what are the legal parameters for a midwife and what at what point she's supposed to transport or change things.
Well, that actually brings us to another topic. If somebody is interested in becoming a midwife, aren't there different rules, regulations, and trainings involved in each state?
Well, okay, there's what's called a direct entry midwife, which is how I'm licensed, and I'm licensed by the state of Arizona. So if I would want to move somewhere else, I would have to go through a different licensing process in that state. Now, certified nurse midwives, it's across the board. If you're licensed in one state, you can work in any state. So it's a little bit different. And nurse midwives have a little stronger relationship. They actually legally have to have a consulting doctor and say if they want to attend home births and their consulting doctor isn't comfortable with that, then legally they can attend home births. Where my relationship with my consulting doctor is a little bit looser, and there are certain situations, like if I have a mother who's had 6 or more kids, then I'm supposed to consult and make sure that the doctor feels it's safe for her to have another baby outside the hospital. But most things, it's more my discretion.
So there are basically different laws in every state.
Yes.
In terms of regulations, but the certified nurse midwife is recognized as more of a national kind of degree.
Yes.
I hear you talk back there. Some statements about that. We could tell you certainly are home in the hospital. Now, let's talk more about some more specific homeopathic remedies. Is there any kind of kit that people can get? I know I had one for my children when they were little and even for now, for basic sort of home health or first aid type things that might occur, like stomach aches and bruises. But what kind of kit would be good to get together for a woman who's pregnant? Is there any little kit available, or should they read through your CD and just choose individual remedies?
Yes, they'd kind of have to. My CD covers 36 remedies, and if you listen to it, probably there would be some that you wouldn't feel were crucial to have on hand. I am considering, I have a company that makes homeopathics, and they make a labor-stimulating formula for me, and I have just recently considered approaching them with the CD because they're considering about carrying that in their catalog, of having just a basic birth kit that they could sell like that, because then people wouldn't have to pick and choose. And I think I can come up with just 10 or 12 remedies that would be cover most situations that people would run into.
Well, let's talk about some of those top ones.
And is enough to get started.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those top ones that I know you do address on the CD.
Well, like for fear, there are two remedies for fear. One is aconite and one is arsenicum. But aconite works for the majority of people, and it's, again, it's just phenomenal. And the other nice thing about homeopathics is they're almost instantaneous in the response. It's not like a medical drug where it often takes 20 minutes before you feel the effect. And my most interesting experience so far with aconite has actually been with a father who was coming in. He was just heaving and gasping. I thought he was going to fall on the floor. And so before I even looked at his wife, I gave him a tablet of aconite, one little tablet. Within 5 minutes, he was just relaxed and laughing and cheerful, gave his wife great support through labor, never needed anything else, which is another thing often with homeopathy is only used on symptoms. So if you give a remedy and it works for, it may work forever, like it did with this guy. You never have to repeat it. And then sometimes the situation's changing and you have to use the same remedy again or maybe give a different remedy. But often it's just one time and it takes care of it. Gelsemium is a remedy. Well, there's several uses for it, but it's for nervous anticipation, and it's part of the labor stimulation formula. If somebody's getting close to the 42-week cutoff of most places now, they don't want women to be pregnant longer than 42 weeks. And again, the homeopathy is a very natural stimulation. It causes a natural labor pattern, so it's definitely a good thing to try before you would move on to Pitocin, which is more intense.
So that would be something that really they could have it at any hospital as well.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm hoping to talk to a doctor here about one remedy which helps babies turn in labor, because normally a baby makes a spiral movement through the pelvis to be born. And if a woman has an epidural, the medication that they put in your spine to make you numb, this relaxes the muscles and causes some babies to not rotate, and so there's quite higher incidence of cesarean with epidurals. And I would really like to see somebody use this homeopathic in the hospital with an epidural in place and see if it would still work, because I, you know, it works very well if there's not an epidural, but I have no idea if it would work with an epidural in place, and it would just be a simple thing that, again, could save thousands of women from having cesareans.
Well, let's talk about what an epidural is a little bit more, just so people might know why it might not be the best thing to run and get, because I think they give those fairly frequently in the hospital.
Oh, yes. Our local hospital, it's 90% now. And I feel like that means the only women that aren't getting epidurals are the ones that run in and drop the baby out before they can get set up, because it takes about 20 minutes to set up to do the epidural, and then it takes another 20 minutes for the epidural to take effect. And I've known women who've had epidurals put in and birth the baby before it even takes effect, and then they're numb after the baby's born, so they can't move their legs, and, you know, makes it harder to breastfeed.
Right. Now, does the medication that's used in an epidural have any particular side effects, or does it get into the breast milk, or do we even know?
It does. Anything that you give the mother crosses the placental barrier and reaches the baby. And they've done studies, 2 weeks after birth, and these drugs are still in the baby's bodies. Because you have to realize the baby has a very immature liver. Anything that's going to affect the mother is essentially going to be an overdose for the baby. And then after they're born, they have to detoxify that with their little immature liver. So they have shown that it makes a difference in breastfeeding, latching on, that early alert state that definitely makes a difference in bonding. Epidurals can be a wonderful thing. They have saved some women from cesareans, but they used to be used in rare instances of extra long or difficult or complicated labor, and not just handed out like candy. You know, one of the main reasons that I'm writing birth story books is I feel that we have young women convinced that labor is just absolutely terrifying, that it could be a disaster at any moment, and that there's no way that they can make it through without narcotic drugs. And I just feel this is completely crazy. I mean, we spend all of pregnancy telling women to stay away from drugs and alcohol, and then they get into labor and we push it on them.
Well, that's...
My first son was born right before the Summer Olympics, and that was what I could most relate labor to, was being a marathon runner, using your body so hard that it's begging you for rest. But that's a very different pain from having a broken bone or being sick. And the triumph when that baby comes out and you know you did it yourself is incredible. It changes your whole life. It changes every decision that you will make from then on, because you understand that you're much more powerful than you ever knew you were.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Now, what about, a lot of mothers do email, because I know that there's many herbs, and homeopathics are different than herbs, but for instance, I get a lot of calls for various herbs such as fenugreek, which can be very supportive in terms of breastfeeding, but are there any homeopathics that can help either with the anxiety about performing that, or even actually helping with the degree of milk that a mother makes?
I'm sure there are. I'm sorry, that's not an area that I'm really experienced in, using homeopathy for breastfeeding. Pulsatilla, which we talked about earlier, is kind of called a women's tonic, and it's very relaxing, so that would definitely be a good one to try. Chamomilla, again, is related to the plant chamomile, and is a homeopathic form of it, and it's also very relaxing and helpful in producing more milk. The thing that I usually encourage women to do is eat oatmeal. Oats will cause an incredible amount of milk. And if you don't like oatmeal, you can soak the oats in water and use that water to make juice or tea, and it will do the same thing. It's
well, that's
really phenomenal.
Thing.
Yeah. It's so easy to find, and everybody usually can get it and use it, or make oatmeal cookies, and you're good to go.
I've also heard of just drinking beer.
Yes, but that mostly is European beer, because it has the actual yeast in it, which I guess American beers don't. But it helps, because if it helps you to relax, that's a big part of breastfeeding. You know, especially in our culture, people can just be too uptight or too anxious to sit down and take that time to relax and breastfeed. So in that case, you know, a beer, a glass of wine can make a big difference. And it's the amount that's going to go through the breast milk to the baby is going to be very minimal and not a cause for concern.
Well, it also may make the baby take a little nap, which is usually a good thing.
Yeah. Well, a long time ago, they used to give babies opium pacifiers. I don't think that's so good.
Try anything. Now, you have some interesting remedies in here that may not even be known by some of our more savvy listeners who understand homeopathy. So I like what the one that you mentioned, which is called antimonium tartaricum,
yes.
And you talk about that for respiratory distress. That could be very important.
Yes, yes. If a baby's born and their lungs just sound kind of crackly and raspy, we can use just one little tablet. The easiest way with a baby is either to dissolve it in water or to just crush the tablet and put the powder in their mouth. And it's pretty instantly absorbed, so even if they push it out with their tongue, they're still going to get the effect. And usually within 5-10 minutes, the lungs are completely clear. I guess I haven't really had a baby with real serious distress, so I can't say positively what effect it would have in that situation, but it's supposed to be great for any kind of respiratory distress.
Now, you even talk about things such as Staphylococcus sangria, which might be helpful even if someone did wind up having a regular hospital birth and did have various kinds of surgery done, such as C-sections.
Yes. Staphylococcus sangria is a remedy for post-surgical trauma, and it works even years later. So, and the great thing about homeopathy is it works on all levels. It's not just a physical healing. It's a mental, emotional, spiritual healing. So if you have a woman who's had a cesarean before and she's planning for a vaginal birth, and, you know, the Staphylococcus sangria will not only help her maybe reduce any scar tissue she might have, but will also help resolve any emotional issues that she might still have because of that surgery.
So it,
and
helps
it can help,
mind,
like,
yeah,
if
the
you
mind
have
body,
a episiotomy
mind
or whatever.
Connection. Yeah. That's, now, that is a very, very interesting concept, because they don't actually know exactly how homeopathy works, since when you measure the molecular substance in homeopathic remedies, there's actually none there.
Yes. Yes, I had one doctor say, oh, homeopathy is like taking an aspirin, rubbing it on your forehead. It's never going to work. But the fact is, you can give it to people who don't know what you're giving them or what to expect from it. You can give it to animals. You can give it to young children. How does it work? It's not a placebo effect, because they get better, you know? And to me, even if it is a placebo effect, I don't care if it works, and it is so effective. But to me, the dramatic changes that you see, one remedy that we often use in labor is semisifuga, which is blue cohosh in an herbal form. And it's what we call the no-way-out remedy. It's for a woman who's just hit the end of her rope. She's like, take me to the hospital, give me a cesarean, whatever, just get this baby out of me. And you can give her this remedy, and again, within just 5 minutes, she'll just be relaxing, breathing with the contractions, totally in control, and often you don't even have to repeat it. She just goes on to birth without any other problems. I find this completely amazing. I mean, I was just shocked the first time I used it.
And then what about vaccinations at birth? Because if someone has a home birth, you're obviously not, because in the hospital now they're giving something like 12 vaccinations within the first day that the baby is born.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize it had gotten that bad. I know they, almost everywhere, they give the hepatitis B vaccine, which to me, I just feel like we're brain dead to be letting our babies get this shot. Hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted disease. It's not floating around in the air. And if the mother doesn't have hepatitis B and you have a safe water source, if you're bottle feeding, there is no way that your baby is exposed to hepatitis. But the rationale really is that they have a captive audience. And so they'd rather just give everybody the shot because they may not come back for well baby visits or be in the medical system during the teenage years when the risky behaviors may occur. I mean, my thinking is let's teach our children, you know, let's educate them about safe sex rather than just shoot them full of drugs. I mean, the CDC in 2000 sent a letter saying stop giving hepatitis B to newborns because more 0 to 14-year-olds were ending up in the hospital because of reactions to the vaccine than ever got hepatitis B. But this is a billions and billions of dollars industry. And, I mean, now they're giving flu vaccines to babies.
Yeah, I know.
It's just incredible to me. And it's only if consumers wake up and demand something else that we'll see any change.
Yeah, it's become a very politicized issue. But, you know, at my house, I got both a letter and a call, a personal call from the CDC just this week, asking if the children in my home have been vaccinated.
Really?
And do you know how many millions of dollars that must cost to ask? They're sort of doing it similar to a census. And to me, there's something very diabolical about that.
Yes. Well, and the fact is that they're, as far as I know, they're not doing research on following a group of children who have not been vaccinated, which there are certainly plenty of them out there that they could be following to see what their lifelong health issues are and, you know, how often they're sick. I unfortunately have had quite a few personal experiences with people, one, a pregnant woman whose sister baby died at 2.5 months, and the coroner asked if the baby had been recently immunized, and he had a week before. And I know several people whose children were walking and talking and got an immunization and regressed, either became autistic or quit talking and walking.
Yeah, unfortunately, those reports are actually escalating in the news daily, and yet the laws that are coming down to disallow non-vaccination are also exponentially increasing. So this is probably a fight we're going to have on our hands for a while. But I do want to thank you so much for being our guest today. Wow, the time flew.
I can't believe it's been almost an hour.
I know. We want to remind our listeners they can find out more about Diane Gregg and her wonderful books at inspiringbirthstories.com, because I'm sure you're not all over there in Bisbee, Arizona, one of my favorite places on the planet. Or you can always get in touch by contacting me, Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, at naturalnurse.com or on Facebook at The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is for myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and the entire Progressive Radio Network crew. We'd like you to stay healthy. Be well. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.